The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov, yeah, I was just reading with some interest that this issue of the labeling of those Palestinian groups as terror groups is really not going away. And the latest is now that some European countries have signed a statement asking Israel for information on why they decided to designate what are considered as non-governmental organizations, in some places considered humanitarian organizations, why Israel's decided to label them as terror organizations. And specifically, the Irish government were very involved when the foreign minister from Ireland was visiting a few weeks ago, and he left Israel saying that Israel had provided no information that could convince them that those organizations that were labeled as terror organizations are indeed terror organizations. So this is an issue that's going to roll for a while, I suspect. Mm.
Do you think Israel could have handled it a little bit better? It does seem as though they just announced it without talking to any of their counterparts.
Could have is a very kind way of saying it. Should have perhaps is a little stronger. I think that in general, when considering these types of diplomatic initiatives, there's always a dilemma between whether to go through the whole consultation process, or whether you just want to push ahead and suffer the consequences. A smart person once said to me, never ask a question if you're in danger of getting the wrong answer. Absolutely. And perhaps the consultation process would effectively bring Israel to a point where there would be no possible way of pursuing labeling these organizations as terror organizations, because once you're already opening yourself up to that consultation, there is a certain expectation that you will listen to what people say to you. And if they come back with an answer which is not consistent with your view for whatever reason, then what do you do? Then where do you go from there? So it's a dilemma which has to be considered.
Absolutely right. Israel has been accused once again of launching attacks against targets in Syria. What do we know about the latest attacks?
Yes, so it's just an ongoing story. The second strike this week, and I think fourth strike in less than a month. And it's interesting listening to the news on the radio this morning, where they're actually talking about like it absolutely was strike by Israel. There's no attempt to even try to be a little cagey about the fact that, well, Israel hasn't really been concerned. The reports are Israel has launched another strike in Syria. It's like a foregone conclusion.
Right.
Some of the media that I've read is still quite cautious in saying, well, it's been reported. It's Syrian news agency that's reported this. But it seems to be almost accepted now that these strikes are indeed being carried out by Israel. And it also shows that there's a lot of activity going on in Syria. I mean, the Israeli Air Force are being kept pretty busy with these strikes. And that is something of an indication of the extent of the activity that's going on in Syria, which is just astonishing. This time around, two Syrian soldiers apparently were injured. Quite a lot of material damage was caused when these strikes were carried out last night, apparently in two major locations, one near to Homs in western Syria and one in Tartus or near to Tartus along the coast. It seems that this time around the targets were weapon storage facilities, particularly near the Shayarat airbase near Homs, and apparently Iranian unmanned aerial vehicles are being stored or being transferred to the Shayarat airbase. So this apparently create something of a threat to Israel. Israel didn't want to have to deal with these drones, the UAVs, and whatever were being transferred to this particular airbase. There were reports that anti-aircraft and anti-missile systems were in action against the Israeli missiles. Reports from the Syrian news agency suggest that most of the attacks were thwarted by these anti-missile systems which were activated. There was even a report from Lebanon that some shrapnel from some of the interceptions landed on a house somewhere in the northeast part of Lebanon. So the Lebanese also unfortunately getting involved. And what's also interesting is that the airspace above the Golan Heights was closed last night to certain flights above a certain height. And that airspace remains closed at least until late this evening. And this airstrike comes on the back of one that we didn't even really have a chance to talk about, which was an airstrike that was carried out over the weekend on Saturday for the very first time that we can recall a daytime airstrike. And this was an airstrike that was carried out against targets near to Damascus, southwest of Damascus. We understand that there might well have been a meeting of some sort of Hezbollah and potentially Iranian Revolutionary Guards that took place in this area on Saturday, which necessitated the daytime strike as opposed to most of the attacks which take place overnight. So this was one carried out in real time. And apparently there were some people killed and wounded in that particular strike. Not a great deal of information has been made known about that particular strike, other than to say that Iran has threatened, Iranian-backed forces have threatened a harsh response after that particular attack took place. So a lot of intelligence going on here, and a massive amount of movements of arms and ammunition and people and equipment, things that are going on in Syria, much of which represent something of a threat to Israel, and just shows to what extent Iran is really trying to entrench itself in Syria, and not necessarily only exclusively in the southern Syrian area, but it really goes up the coast, storing arms and ammunition and drones and things like that all over the place, and Israel having to keep quite busy in order to keep track of all of these movements.
Yep, so it continues. Controversy surrounds Israel's decision to airlift people out of Ethiopia in the midst of a civil war that is raging there at the moment. This is very worrying. A lot of South Africans, of course, now very confused as well about whether they can travel through Ethiopia. What is the latest there?
Well, there is this issue, the civil war that's going on in Ethiopia, and we also, in parallel, still have a number of people, some thousands of people, who are gathered in Ethiopia waiting for an opportunity to come to Israel. Now, the groups of people who've been waiting there have predated the current outbreak of the civil war, and our Minister for Aliyah and Absorption, the Minister Pnina Tamano-Shatta, who people may recall is also herself a former Ethiopian immigrant, and our minister in our government responsible for Aliyah, she has been advocating very strongly to just go and pick these people up and bring them to Israel. She's been somewhat successful, and quite a number of people have already been picked up and brought along here. The main controversy that surrounds these people, even before the outbreak of the civil war, is, are they really Jewish? Is this an economic migration issue? Do they have the right to be picked up by Israel and to take advantage of Israel's economic benefits that are given to new immigrants from Ethiopia? Or is this just something that people are doing opportunistically in order to improve their lives rather than have true rights? And of course, there's been a lot of debate about who is Jewish and who is not Jewish. And that's an important debate to hold, because people who are not Jewish and who don't have at least one Jewish grandparent are under the law not entitled to claim citizenship and rights and benefits under the law of return. So this is a debate that's been going on for quite some time. But in recent weeks, that's been added to now by the airlift that Israel said. Israel's foreign ministry, first of all, issued a travel warning for people not to go to Ethiopia. All Israelis have been urged to avoid unnecessary travel to Ethiopia. Citizens already there have been asked to shorten their stay to avoid areas of conflict, and in most cases to return home. Also, diplomatic staff have been cut down to the bare minimum, even though the diplomatic mission continues its work in Ethiopia. Families have been asked to return home just in order to make sure that they don't come to any harm in this particular conflict that is now raging in Ethiopia. But as I said before, there was an airlift of people brought to Ethiopia, and the Ethiopian Prime Minister has contacted Prime Minister Naftali Bennett to say that apparently some people who are on the airlift brought to Israel include those who are implicated for war crimes, officers who have been implicated for war crimes, and apparently they've been evacuated and brought to Israel, which seems to have been a good way for them to escape these charges. So this has now become a prime minister to prime minister issue. It's not clear exactly what the Israeli government plans to do about this, if anything, whether they plan to go and try and find those people and somehow return them to Ethiopia to go through whatever process they might be having to go through, accused of those war crimes. But certainly this has created some level of tension between the Israeli and the Ethiopian governments, because obviously the individuals concerned are activists who are fighting against the Ethiopian governmental forces on the side of the militias that are fighting the forces. So a little bit of controversy. It's not clear how this is going to be resolved, if the prime minister plans at all to accede to the request from Ethiopia. I guess time will only tell.
Yeah, I just hope it gets resolved there very, very quickly. And it's such a sad situation, because we saw such an amazing opportunity for Ethiopia, for the airline, for Addis Ababa, as people were starting to see it as an option. And now, of course, it takes so much time to rebuild confidence, for people who, as it is, were feeling very worried about travel. The Israeli shekel has reached a 25-year high against the U.S. dollar. That happened yesterday. What continues to drive dollar strength? I mean, the shekel strength.
Yeah. I think it's a combination not only of the strength of the Israeli economy in general, but also this whole speculation about interest rates. At the moment, Israeli interest rates particularly low. We've seen an upward pressure on interest rates elsewhere around the world. Is Israel going to follow suit and raise interest rates or not? I think that has really brought the shekel to the peak yesterday. It dipped below 310 against the US dollar for the first time in 25 years. And this is creating something of a party atmosphere for people who want to buy things from online sites. Amazon particularly has been shipping so many items to Israel. I think they have dedicated flights now, bringing plane loads of goods to Israel for those people who've ordered through Amazon. And of course, it's becoming so much cheaper all the time for people to buy these items. And there were rumors at some stage that Amazon had got their shipping costs all wrong, because actually a lot of the items that are being bought through Amazon in particular do not incur shipping costs. And apparently they had no limit on it for a certain period of time. There were stories about people who'd ordered a washing machine online and had it delivered to their home from Amazon, which sounds a little crazy. Even if we take the crazy bits out of it, people are just ordering stuff online like crazy. There's so much going on. And also, the latest thing is now very, very cheap air tickets. I saw advertised that you can fly to Cyprus for €6. So you can go and have a return trip to Cyprus for €12 per person. It costs you more to get to the airport if you wanted to take the train or public transport than the actual plane ride to Cyprus, which sounds a little crazy as well. But here's the real kicker that's going on in the Israeli economy right now. Just yesterday, a whole bunch of importers, suppliers, particularly of toiletries and cleaning goods, announced that their prices are going to be going up by between 15 and 50% per item. Okay. Now, one would have thought that goods that are imported from abroad in light of the strength of the Israeli shekel would actually go down in price rather than go up. And yet the prices of these cleaning items, toiletries, cosmetics, things like that are going up dramatically. And there is absolutely no shame in saying so. The announcement was made publicly. Certain items, I don't know, mouthwash, for example, 48% price increase, things like that. The reason that's being given is a shortage of supply. There seem to be shortage of supply chains around the world. This is not an Israeli specific thing. This is apparently what's going on around the world. Also, costs of transportation are going up, because ironically the price of oil, price of petrol has been going up. So there is a certain addition to transportation costs. But in the most part, we are being told that supply chain issues are resulting in these massive increases in prices. And this is in spite of the fact that the shekel is so strong. So I don't really know how to put all of that together, but that's the reality of what's going on in our economy right now.
Crazy, crazy times. Absolutely incredible. And 500 Palestinians are due to receive permits to work in Israel's high-tech industry. What lies behind this decision?
Yeah, so also, once again, you know, some crazy things going on in the economy, and what we're seeing in the Israeli economy right now is a real shortage of work staff. People, you just can't find people to hire here. Anybody and everybody could pretty much find a job. People are just being grabbed off the streets in order to fill positions. There are so many openings, and that's particularly true in the high-tech industry. So there have been a number of government ministries working together to try to resolve this issue and also to try and bring a little bit of goodwill between the Palestinian Authority and the Israeli economy by hiring Palestinian high-tech workers or people who have graduated from technology courses in Palestinian Authority universities to come and work in the Israeli high-tech industry. Just so many job openings, so much staff required in order to fill these jobs, and just a very shortage, a massive shortage of supply. And so what's been announced is that permits will be issued during the course of the next year for approximately 200 people, with a further 200 permits in 2023 and potentially 100 more permits after that. What we're being told is that something like 75% of people who graduate from Palestinian universities, particularly those in the technology sector, remain unemployed because of the fact that in their particular economy, there really aren't any jobs to be had. So it seems an absolutely logical thing that those people would come to work in Israel, would bring a bit of economic growth to their side of the house, and to allow those people to have a good job. Certainly, having experience working in Israeli high tech is not a bad thing to put onto your CV. And of course, this comes in addition to more than 12,000 blue collar workers who already have permits to work in Israel and across the border each day to come and work in the Israeli industry. So, you know, I think that's a good thing, and this will certainly drive not only the Israeli economy, but hopefully the Palestinian economy as well. And it makes sense. I mean, let's not forget that in high tech today in Israel, there are many, many Arab workers, Arab Israeli workers working in the high tech industry. So that's not an issue. Those people certainly have jobs and they are employed, and we see them in all of the high tech zones. Now we're going to add people who are not Israelis, passport carrying Israelis, but, you know, who live near enough to be able to commute backwards and forwards, and hopefully will add to our industry as well.
Mm. And all signs of a very, very healthy and growing economy, which is just incredible. It is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem. It's 101.9 High FM. Good morning.